Hare Krishna. We'd like to welcome everyone here to an evening at the Hare Krishna Center. There's a formal welcome. Very proper. As we're walking up the steps to the Hare Krishna Center, we all probably noticed it's a bit of a mess, to say the least. It looks like a building site, as they say. Well, it is a building site, which is what it looks like. A building site is being refurbished. But we're confident that it will gradually be much better, better than when we started out. Which reminded me of some of the many wonderful transcendental words of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. One of his statements is that from imperfection, perfection will come about. This statement of his comes in the, it's part of the famous statement he made, that, oh, for that day when the English, American, French, Prussian, German, Russian, didn't say the Poles, but I guess they're included also. The general idea is that the people of the Western countries will come and join with our Bengali brethren and embrace each other and chant Jai Sachinandana, Jai Sachinandana. The people of the Western world will take mudangas and kartals and banners and go through the streets of the cities chanting the holy names, and the Harinam Sankirtan will become the universal church. This is all the vision of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And within that statement he said that from imperfection, perfection will come about. And he went on to further say that why not? Nothing is completely perfect in the beginning, but it can improve. Now, of course, that is quite the opposite of what usually happens in the material world, especially in Kali Yuga. Things tend to get worse all the time. Isn't it? Though we can all say, most of us are either grey-haired or heading that way, if we have any hairs. Well, there are a few younger people also, but don't worry, you'll get older soon too. But we can look back and see, well, it was better when I was young. Things weren't so bad. That's what our parents said. That's probably what our children will say too. It's, there you go. Someone wants to add a little evidence to the general situation is crazy and getting worse. In fact, what is considered normal nowadays would be considered just a complete lawlessness and chaos just a generation or a couple of generations ago. People would be shocked, but now the shocking has become normal and it becomes difficult to shock anyone. People try really hard. I mean, it used to be that our Hare Krishna style of dressing was shocking, but it's, yeah, people have really, well, and even that was a problem about the 1980s, with the punk generation. They made a point to try to shock others. It's very difficult to shock anyone just simply by your manner of dress these days. It's probably not possible. So anyway, the point is that in the material world, especially in Kali Yuga, everything is deteriorating. So how is it that from imperfection, perfection will come about? It's just the opposite of what we generally see. Things tend to get worse, not better. And we've probably all heard that, what is that? Any system is one of the laws of one of the laws of thermodynamics or something. I'm trying to sound scientific here. That any system left without control tends to chaos. Just like, for instance, if you have a petrochemical factory, and you don't monitor it carefully, then it's going to be a big mess. You won't, the result of whatever they're doing, they're producing different nylons and polymers and whatever they're producing, it won't be there. You might not just have a big explosion or something. If it's not properly supervised, or even in the state, if the police aren't going around the streets, then the thieves and rogues will flourish. Sometimes in America the police went on strike. Or in New Orleans there was the city, the breakdown, I mean, the city was flooded and there's breakdown of law and order, and whenever the police go on strike, as soon as that news is there, then immediately looting and wholesale, you know, all kinds of crime takes place. That means that the criminals are being held in check by the Garda, as they're called here. So the tendency is there to be uncontrolled among people also. People want freedom, but they say we should have freedom, they value freedom, but freedom also means that there's more disturbance in society, because the idea is that there's an idea that people should have freedom, but that's based on the idea that people are responsible, but then so many people are irresponsible and they misuse that freedom. So one of the results of having such a free society that we have nowadays is that people, they're so free that they have to go to sleep with a multiple locking system and security and alarms, and because, well, where's the freedom? their house is like their own prison that they're locked into, and they won't open the door to anyone, they're afraid to do it. So in some countries they prefer strictness, actually. It's like in Russia, they voted to have they want to have a strict, heavy government, because then there's more law and order. And that's another example. As soon as the really heavy communist regime broke down in Russia, immediately the Russian mafia came up, and it didn't take long to get organized. You're from Russia?
Slovakia.
Yeah, well, they're all in Czech. The Czech Republic is run by the Russian mafia. They run, you know, everything. So they came and they spread out all over the world. And so anyway, the main point I'm talking about here is not freedom, but how in the material world everything deteriorates. There's no perfection to start off with, and things get worse anyway. And that we see always. There was so many empires, and they're so powerful, and they looked invincible, and the sun never sets on the British Empire, there used to be a saying. Prabhupada, he came to London and said, how is it if the sun never sets on the British Empire, then it never shines in London? Prabhupada said that, it's always to the point. But then there was the Cold War between the, more or less, America and America's allies, and Russia and Russia's allies, I guess you could call them, as like forced to be allies. And then that all broke down, and America became the single power in the world, and now they're going down. It's inevitable. America had great days, just lasted for a few years, and now they're on the way down. Who's coming up? I don't know. Who can say? Maybe it's Iraq, you never know. Iran, Iraq, who can say? Maybe it's India, they're saying, the world's great superpower. Who knows, who cares? Anyway, the point is that everything tends to go down. Even if something comes up in this world, it goes down again. So what is this Bhaktivinoda Thakur saying, that from imperfection, perfection will come about? That's because he was talking about the rise of the Sankirtan movement, which is of a different energy, spiritual energy, which is meant for an overhaul of the whole society. Actually a revolution. The word revolution was popular in the Western world, a trendy word in the 60s, 70s. Beatles made a song talking about a revolution. Well, you know. So it was a popular word. It was a But that word is used in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Tadvag visargo janataga viplavo. Viplavaha. Viplavaha means revolution. And it's specifically stated therein that it's talking about the Srimad Bhagavatam itself, which is meant for creating a revolution in the impious lives of a misdirected population. And it's predicted in Brahma Vaivarta Purana that within this very dark Kali Yuga there will be a golden age when by Sankirtan and discussion of Srimad Bhagavatam people will become civilized for a start and God realized. So we see in our own ISKCON society we were very idealistic and maybe naive about the prospects of Krishna. Well, Srila Prabhupada himself said that we can take over the world in 18 days with Krishna consciousness if we're ready, but we're not ready obviously. But that is the possibility. It should happen. Once Giriraj Maharaj, he asked Srila Prabhupada, he often used to ask these very intelligent questions. So one of his questions is that Srila Prabhupada, we have the best philosophy, the best process, and the best spiritual master. So why is it that we have so many problems? Everything we have is a perfect philosophy, perfect process, perfect spiritual master. Srila Prabhupada's reply was, any guesses, anyone know? It's a really tough one. Huh? Perfect problem? Perfect program or perfect process?
Problems.
Yeah, well, problem by its very definition means it's not perfect, is it?
In the shower, is it?
Mm-hmm.
But in the shower, the Prabhupada said that it's like being in the shower.
He did say that. It's like being in the shower. You can't criticize someone for being dirty when they're in the shower. Or you can't criticize the patient for... We can't go in the hospital. It's not fair to go in the hospital and say, well, everyone's sick here. Because at least they're in the curing process. Prabhupada said that the reason is because the sannyasis and brahmacharis associate with the women too much. That was Prabhupada's reply. How about that one? Prabhupada often pointed this out. Of course, it's not very fashionable in ISKCON today to point this out, like some other things, but... No, he didn't just point out, I mean, Vyasadeva pointed it out. The whole world is running on sex desire. What is it? They say the world is running on love, but in the language, or in the understanding of the Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, in other words, the perspective of the absolute truth, that yes, the whole world is running on the misdirected understanding of love. The Pungsastriya Mittani Bhavanetam Tayor Etat Tridya Grantirahu Ato Griha Kshetra Sutapya Vitaya Janatsya Moho Yamaham Mameti. The attraction between male and female is the basic principle of material life, and that forms a hard knot on the heart by which one becomes attached to one's home, land, land in the sense of one's own property and then also one's country of birth. Janani janma bhumischa swargameva gariyase. There's a well-known saying that one's mother and one's land of birth, they are better than heaven. So is the saying. So one becomes attached to one's home, wife, children, money, bank balance, and all these different kinds of things, aren't there? Relatives. And then, in this way, one is bewildered into thinking of terms of I, me, and mine. So, Srila Prabhupada diagnosed that if there are any problems in the Krishna conscious movement, the underlying cause, everything should be seen philosophically through the eye of Shastra. It's perverted understanding, which at the very root of that is sexual desire, which manifests in various ways. Profit, adoration, and distinction, Srila Prabhupada used to use. We used to talk about this a lot. We used to use these terms, which is taken from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's La Puja Pratishtha. This Chaitanya Mahaprabhu warned on the path of bhakti, three very dangerous elements are the desire for personal gain, honor and worship, profit, adoration and distinction. Srila Prabhupada used these terms. So it means selfishness instead of selflessness. A devotee is nishkam, Krishna bhakta nishkam, ateva shanta, bhukti mukti siddhi kami shakali ashanta. A devotee is peaceful because he has no material desires, whereas those who are desirous of material gain, liberation from this material world, or some mystic opulence, they're all disturbed in their heart. This desire for material gain, that's gross. That I will do some service for Krishna, and one for Krishna, one for me, kind of thing. And here's the collection, okay, that's... I did my work and Krishna gave the blessing, so all right, he gets half, I get half, something like this. So that's pretty gross. But one Hare Krishna, say Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. But the mukti, the desire for liberation, well, we don't see many devotees who want liberation, do we? We don't find many devotees saying that, well, I'm chanting Hare Krishna, but I want to merge into the impersonal Brahman. We don't find that. Although there was, well, he's still there. He's in Puri now. He's one devotee. He's been in ISKCON for many, many years, and he's been doing very menial services. He's actually initiated in the Gauriya Math, I think even before, maybe before ISKCON was even formed. He's very old now. He's been performing very menial services for many, many years, even though he's quite educated. But he said, I just want to serve the devotees because it's the easiest way to go to heaven. He's quite open about it. He says, I want to go to Swarga Loka. So all his life he served the devotees. But still, his idea is, I'll go to heaven by doing that. So there's bhukti kami, one who wants mature. I mean, he lives very simply and austerely, and he's very honest and everything, but he has full belief that if he serves the devotees, he can go to heaven. But we don't find, we find anyone say, I want to go in the impersonal Brahman. No, we don't find that. But Hare Krishna. The desire for peace or comfort, that can also be an obstacle in bhakti. that we simply, I'll do a little service and live comfortably. Or I'll do whatever, I don't want to do a service if it's too much discomfort for me. I know some devotees in India who joined as brahmacharis. And, you know, in India there are so many sadhus, and generally people become sadhus because they're, you know, their family life isn't together, or they just can't get it together in material life, or it's just too frustrating, and oh, let me become a sadhu, no responsibilities. And they're usually pious people, because at least they have to put on some kind of show of being saintly. Otherwise they don't have people. Mostly they spoke Buddhists also. Prabhupada commented, that's in that book, Renunciation Through Wisdom. He's saying about the sadhus in India, even though many of them smoke bidi, still they're not attached to gross sense gratification. They don't go to the cinema or anything like that. And you'll see they're very austere, actually. Many of them. I saw once at Kurukshetra in the winter. So we were sleeping inside. It was so cold. I mean, probably Ireland was colder, but, you know, all the houses have heating, whereas there's no heating there. And, but all the sadhus were sleeping outside. And it was just like a wall with a cover, but it was open completely on one side. A cold wind, and they had a blanket. And, really austere. So many people become sadhus. They prefer that life. They wander around. They go from one holy place to another. And many of them do, they chant a few mantras in the morning or recite some verses from Gita, or they have some kind of piety. Like that, they go from holy, they wander from one holy place to another. And in this way, they avoid the frustrations and difficulties. Usually it's people who've had it, they just couldn't get it together in their family life, or something went wrong, or some of them, sometimes they're young boys from very early life. They just want to be a sadhu, that's all. It's something in them from their previous life. So sometimes I've seen some people join ISKCON with the idea of being a sadhu. I want to be a sadhu. But they think they're going to get a peaceful life, and they're in for a shock because it's not a very peaceful life. It's a pushing movement, as Srila Prabhupada said. I mean, I suppose it is possible to find some kind of a peaceful slot as a pujari or something, but in general, there's a lot of pushing. There's a, you know, even the pujaris, they have to work hard. So just now, this festival, Janmashtami, the pujaris, the festivals especially, pujaris are working. Anyway, generally there's not enough pujaris, so pujaris they have a heavy schedule, and at festival it increases more, and they don't get any break. It's like, you know, after Janmashtami, most of the devotees, they take like a day or something to take off, but they're up till like 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock, and Mangaladi is at 4:30, and at least the pujari has to be there, and the schedule goes on. There's no stopping. There's no break in the schedule. Yeah, so. It's actually difficult to find a peaceful spot in ISKCON because it's a pushing movement. That's what Srila Prabhupada said. My spiritual master pushed me, I'm pushing you, and you should push others. He said it's just like the train. The engine, it pushes the wagon, and one wagon pushes another, and one pushes and that pushes the next one, and this way the train goes on. So I've seen some devotees, they join, and then they leave again, and they become a sadhu. they just go and live in an ashram. They go. I mean, I know 2-3 cases of devotees who left, and two of them were critical of ISKCON. This isn't right. That isn't right. And they've just gone to live peacefully in some ashram. Another one says, "Well, I'm on the wrong path, but well, what can I do? I can't come back now." It's the desire for comfort or peace. I like Krishna, but there's too much pushing, so just I'll be a sadhu in my own way. That's their idea. So that's an extreme response to the pushing of life in ISKCON. Or one may think, well, I'll find another guru or some other organization where they don't push you so hard and they don't have such strict rules. I'll just get a guru who's full of prem, and just by his blessing I'll be full of prem. I don't have to do any work or anything. I'll get a real guru. A real guru just gives a blessing, that's all. And I'll sit at home and watch TV and do everything and chant Hare Krishna now and then, and I'll get Krishna prem. Sometimes there's this, you have to get a premi guru. Well, you can get a guru who's total premi guru, fully blissed out, millions of times more advanced than Srila Prabhupada, ha ha ha, who didn't speak about prem in every other breath. But still you have to do your own work. Even if Chaitanya Mahaprabhu directly is your own guru, you still have to do your own work of doing sadhana, controlling the senses, and all these basic things. The example is there of Kala Krishna Das, who was personally traveling with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and got into Maya because he didn't control his mind and senses. So even if you have Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as your personal direct guru standing, living with him at every moment, sometimes people say, well, I don't see my guru. Even if you are with your guru, but everyone has to ultimately fly their own plane. Everyone has to do their own work. So that's one kind of cop-out, that just leave and go away. But even within devotional service, that desire for mukti can subtly manifest as the desire to just keep it easy, keep it comfortable, do as little as possible, and try to find shortcuts. We find that in material life also, that some people have given, even if they're paid by a company to do a job, they'll do it in as minimal a way as possible. They just do exactly what they're paid for, and they'll do less if they can get away with it. They have no sense of pride in doing the job. I should try and do it well. No sense of commitment. Just I want to get the most for the least. So often, yeah, that's really the attitude, isn't it? And some devotees, they want to, they think, well, I'll just go to Radha Kund and I don't really have to do anything or work hard. And it's like the idea, you get the most for the least. You don't do anything and you still want to get more than anyone else. But as Srila Prabhupada noted, advancement in Krishna consciousness depends on the attitude of the performer. So one can apparently go to Radha Kund but not really be there at all. If one's attitude, because Radha means she who is the best worshipper. So one who has a mood of service, they can enter into Radha Kund, even if they don't physically go there. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur pointed out that great devotees like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Narottam Das, Shyamananda, they all, although they visited Vrindavan, they didn't live there. But they were certainly always in Vrindavan far more than the so-called Babajis who live there and smoke bidis and talk about praying day and night. Well, they don't talk about day and night. So, entrance to that realm is by surrender and commitment. That is the basic principle. Surrender, commitment, the desire to please Krishna by one's service. It's not a cheap thing. Nothing good comes cheaply. Of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu made Krishna consciousness easily available. But what is Krishna consciousness? Krishna consciousness means there must be surrender, commitment to Krishna. But that is the, although Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is giving the opportunity to enter into that very easily, but still that there's no substitute for one's own commitment, surrender. So we find that Srila Prabhupada, he didn't talk, he didn't use this word praying very much. It's because we'll find he used the word surrender more. He talked about controlling the mind and the senses and engaging in the service of Krishna, because this naturally leads to Krishna praying. It's not that Srila Prabhupada didn't speak of it, that is the goal of life, but as a practical acharya, he gave us programs by which we could practically surrender to Krishna and engage ourselves in Krishna's service. And in this way, that automatically develops. There is a path. Ādo śradhā tata sadhu saṅga tato nārta nivritti set tato niṣṭhā vichistata atā saktis tato bhāva ato prema bhyudanchiti sādhā kānamayam prema prādo bhāve bhavet kramaha. The word is used, kramaha, step by step, beginning with faith, then associating with devotees, then undergoing the activities of devotional service as outlined by Rupa Goswami himself. In the next day, that will lead to anartha nivritti, the decline and overcoming of all the unwanted things in the heart. Then firmness in devotional service, taste, attachment, then bhav, the ecstasy that is the precursor or the stage before praying or full love of Krishna. So it's not such a cheap thing. It can be had very easily. So bhukti, mukti, siddhi, these desires, that they are opposite to bhakti. Bhukti, this Rupa Goswami also says, Srila Rupa Goswami, bhukti, what is this? Bhukti, mukti, pishachi, jabat, I'm forgetting. Pishachi hridi vartate. Bhukti mukti spriha javat. Pishachi hridi vartate. Tavat bhakti sukhasyatra katama bhyodayo bhavet. He gives the rhetorical question, how is it possible for the bliss of bhakti to arise in the heart of one whose heart is taken over by the witches of desire for material enjoyment and liberation? And I'm extending this mukti, the idea of mukti, to just living comfortably, not having to work very hard, not having to do very much, just take it easy. That's also a kind of desire for mukti, isn't it? Just get free. Get free from all your problems. Take it easy. So that's the desire for mukti is to get free from all problems. But often we find devotees say, well, when I take into Krishna consciousness, all the time people ask that the problems are increasing. I took up bhakti because I thought I'd be free from problems, but all my problems are increasing. Sometimes people go away, but if that happens, if they ask, I say, it's very good. It's a good sign. It shows that Krishna is giving his mercy to you by giving you problems. Then you have to think very deeply about the purpose of life. Either you can go away and go and try and find something else that gets you free from your problems. You can try and do some meditation or become a Christian, or there are so many. There are millions, thousands of alternatives of psychological method, taking intoxication, various religious or pseudo-religious processes one can take up to get free from the stresses and tensions and strains and difficulties. Well, apart from the stresses and tensions, I mean, there are very real things like legal problems, debts, living with violent people in one's own home, one's own closest relatives. Sometimes the parents are beating up the children, sometimes the children are beating up the parents. And so these are very real problems that people, I mean, not just psychological problems, which are also real, but well, a lot of times it's just imagination also. Anyway, how to get free from the problems? One can try different processes, but if one is fortunate to come in contact with Krishna consciousness, one can be free from all problems forever. And then people say, well, my problems are increasing. But then if one is in one contact with devotees, then one can inquire and get the philosophical angle, or the, not just by philosophy, we don't just mean some idle speculation, but the perspective of reality. Why are there problems? Why do I have so many problems? It's the government's fault. It's my father's fault. He beat me when I was a child, and therefore I'm screwed up. And all through life, people go on saying, everything's useless. It's all my father's fault. And they spoil their whole life because their father beat them. And they could just say, well, my father beat me, but today's today and let's get on with life. They don't have to carry that around with them. Anyway, what does the Bhagavatam say about this? Tattenu kampam susamikshamano bhunjana evatma kritang vipakam ridvagvapubevithan namaste jiveta yo muktipade saddaya bhak. Srila Prabhupada said, this verse should be the guide of all devotees. This verse. How many verses did Prabhupada give us? There's 18,000 in the Bhagavatam, another 700 in the Gita, and 11 in the Nectar of Instruction. And how many? 18 in Isha Upanishad, and Chaitanya Charitamrita? I'm not sure. Anyway, Srila Prabhupada gave us thousands of verses. He said, this one verse should be the guide of all devotees. The meaning of it is that a person who accepts their lot, that whatever situation I'm in, whatever difficulties I may be in, they consider, well, this is due to my, it's not due to the government, it's not due to the it's not due to my parents, it's not due, I can't blame it on my wife, I can't blame it on anyone, it's my own fault. I deserve it and more. It's due to my past sinful reactions. If one thinks like that, instead of trying to point the blame here, there, everywhere, well, whatever situation I'm in, it's because of something I have done previously to cause suffering to others, and now I'm getting a reaction. And actually I deserve much more, but by Krishna's blessing, I'm just getting a little bit of what I really deserve. But anyway, whatever the case may be, whatever the situation may be, let me go on serving Krishna to my fullest capacity, with mind, body and words. And in this way, if one has this attitude, what nowadays we would call a positive attitude to life, get on with life, never mind the difficulties. What is that? Damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead. There's a famous saying in America. One admiral was told, as he was sailing his ships in to attack some port, that he was told it's all full of, mines at sea. Or as, so he said, no, torpedoes, there's some torpedo ship. He said, damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead. Which sounds pretty foolish actually, but it's a positive attitude. Discretion is also the better part of valor. But anyway, he wasn't discouraged. He didn't see it as an insurmountable obstacle. That's the point. So in Krishna consciousness also, there's no insurmountable obstacle. Nothing can ever be so bad that it can't be overcome. It doesn't matter what anyone does to you. However badly your temple president treats you, for instance, we've heard so many stories of temple presidents mistreating others, and the solutions solved in the Republic of Ireland, don't have any temple. So that's one alternative. It's not a very good alternative, better to have a temple. with despite all the inevitable difficulties, it's better to have a temple. So we can say, well, it's the GBC's fault and this, that, the other. But ultimately, at the end of life, we have to think of Krishna. And to do that, we have to chant Hare Krishna. And we have to serve Krishna. And at the end of life, you can't say, well, my GBC, this, that, the other, and I didn't like my guru, and didn't smile at me the way I wanted him to, and this, that, and the other. At the end of life, we have to remember Krishna. To remember Krishna, we have to follow the process that Srila Prabhupada gave us. You have to go on with it. It's coming soon. You're all going to die soon. That's considered like the most outrageous thing you could tell. You're going to die soon too. What a horrible thing to say. Well, folks, it's true. Sorry to pop your bubble there, but it's true. Everyone's going to die soon. It's not going to be very long. Even for the little baby. It's not a curse, but it's just a fact. The little baby will soon be a little baby girl, will soon be an attractive young girl with all the boys looking at her, and then she'll fluttering her eyes and this and that, and then she'll gradually grow older, and then wrinkles will come, and the beautiful girl will be a basket case, and you know, just living on the dole or whatever, and then one fine day will come when the once little child that was everyone was saying goo goo ga ga to is now history. Now of the past. The body is dead. So we're all travelers on the path. Where to? Well, we all have to go through the door of death. And it's not going to be a very long time from now. And if we come out on the other side, if we chant Hare Krishna, we can come out in Golok Vrindavan. If we don't, well, you know, the Janaloka, Tapaloka, Mahaloka, there's so many places to go. There's dog, rat. Of course, those who chant Hare Krishna anytime, at least they're going to go to the heavenly planets. What do you want to go there for? It says, sounds like really a lot of Maya, doesn't it? You know, all these dancing girls dancing around, and then there's this kind of wine that you drink, and sounds like really heavy Maya. Sounds like a really tough place for being Krishna conscious. And Dublin's a lot better than the heavenly planets. You may think it's a rough deal in Dublin, but it's better for being Krishna conscious than the heavenly planets. So better watch out, folks. I mean, me too. Otherwise we'll all end up in the heavenly planets and forgetting Krishna. Or just kind of wishing we'd worked it out better. And then by the time you finish your session in the heavenly planets, you'll come down again, and the golden period of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's period will be over, and then you know, we'll be lucky if we get born without our parents eating us. And then it's going to be pretty rough. That Prabhupada said that be serious so we can go back to Godhead in this life, because if we have to come back again in this Kali Yuga, it's going to be really rough, really rough. So from imperfection, perfection should come about. We have a lot of work to do. People are forgetting Krishna. We have to start with ourselves, remembering Krishna. There's good scope, no doubt, for spreading Krishna consciousness. No doubt. The more Krishna consciousness is preached, the greater opportunity, the more the situation for preaching Krishna consciousness improves. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur's vision will come to be, but not by mukti, bhukti, siddhi, kam, not by the desires for material enjoyment, sense gratification, comfort, liberation, become a mystic yogi, all these things. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement cannot be spread or established by
that doesn't open.
Okay, just leave it. I'll finish up then. I'll just, it's getting a bit late. What's the time? 10 to 9. Okay. So, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't come to give mixed devotional service. For those who have the spirit of living for Krishna, giving their lives for Krishna, they can implant that spirit to others. And that is the spirit that will make the revolution of Krishna consciousness in the world. Of course, I'm preaching a bit to the choir here because there are some of you, many of you here are fully dedicated your lives for seriously for spreading Krishna consciousness. So that's wonderful. We see Giridhari Prabhu there trying to stay awake after leading the kirtan. Which kirtan? How many kirtans? It's one kirtan after another. It's a life of kirtan, non-stop kirtan. So if you sometimes get a little tired, we don't mind, because we know that you're working hard for Krishna. But anyway, I'll finish here because probably others are tired also. Long way to go. All the way back to where? County what? County Galway somewhere?
Leitrim.
County Leitrim. It's quite a long drive at night. So anyway, Hare Krishna, thank you for coming. And please bless me that I may sometime come out of my imperfection, come to the path of perfection. It's not easy. It's easy to, you know, have a big name sannyasi and sit on a big seat and have everyone praise you and this and that, but to actually clean the heart is a lot more difficult, and it's probably more difficult being a sannyasi with all people telling, oh, you're so great and you're so pretty tough job. So anyway, please bless me that I can sometimes also come out of Maya and be Krishna conscious. So is there any question, please? Comments, protest. Yes, you always have very complex questions. I hope that your tenure in the garden has helped you to meditate on even more complex questions. Or maybe, yeah, okay.
It's not so complex.
Okay, well, take the mic anyway.
The point about desire for freedom from misery or suffering.
Yeah.
Isn't that also what Krishna, he appeals to that in one sense?
Yeah.
If you take this path, you will be free.
Yeah, very good point. Thank you very much. I should have mentioned it in the class. Yeah, the desire to be free from suffering is also, that's a beginning in spiritual life. If one is content in the material world, then how will one get the impetus for spiritual life? Lord Krishna points out in Bhagavad Gita, janma mrityu jara vyadhi dukkha dosha anudarshanam. One should see that this material world is miserable, being filled with birth, death, old age and disease. Yes, that is a beginning impetus to get free from the material world, but that in and of itself doesn't give love of Krishna. And if one's motivation is only to be free from suffering and doesn't develop the desire to, one doesn't develop the desire to serve Krishna and surrender to Krishna, then you won't get love of Krishna. Because yadrishi yadrishi shraddha siddhi bhavati tadrishi, we get what we aim for. According to our faith, according to our Shraddha, we get that kind of siddhi or achievement. So yes, it's a beginning. Look, this material world is miserable. We need to get out of it. How do we get out of it? By developing Krishna consciousness. What is Krishna consciousness? Surrender to Krishna without any personal desire, even the desire for liberation. So it may appear like a contradiction. But yes, it's a beginning to start examining this world and seeing how miserable it is. And what is the cause of that misery? The cause of the misery is our forgetfulness of Krishna. That's the proper understanding or a lack of desire to serve Krishna. There are various levels of preaching. Someone just said to me yesterday that he's very much fixated on the idea of sin. That if I don't, if born in a pious Indian family, devotee family, but he's 30 years old, something like that. So, but he's afraid that if I do something wrong, I'll get sinful reaction. So that seems to be a major motive for him not eating meat and not taking intoxication and all these things. So it's a beginning. But in and of itself, it doesn't give love of Krishna. The fear of sinful reaction. It's a beginning. But we don't preach so much like that. That you don't eat meat or you'll go to hell. We don't preach much like that. It's true that meat eaters go to hell, but we try to appeal to higher motivation also. Yeah.
Someone I was working in this summer in ecological farm.
Please.
In ecological farm I was working. And this farm has like a yoga center and many seminars. People go there to do yoga. And then it came a group of one enlightened person. He was a kind of spiritual...
Kind of spiritual, yeah.
Enlightenment. So my first reaction to the one, trying to be Hare Krishna, I was I'm going to smash that person. Because I didn't like the idea at all that somebody is called himself enlightened. But then I met him, and he was a young person, very simple, and he was an ex-Hare Krishna, so he can speak my own language, like Haribol Prabhu, Ogre Sihira Prabhupada. Anyway, and he asked me to do some bhajans for his group, his students, and do a little explanation of the philosophy. But my question is that after talking with him, nothing philosophical, I was feeling very positive, very good. And all the students, they say the same, that everyone who talks with this person, they feel very peace inside. So I was thinking, how is possible, because a person can give that kind of peace or maybe some energy or prana, I don't know.
Yeah.
In this regard, I saw a photo in some publication of a Buddhist monk in America, and he was glowing. You can see from the photo, had a lot of obviously a very strong aura. No doubt from following austerities and leading a pure life and being detached from material life. So they may have some level of spiritual realization. But it's not without Krishna, without the motive of surrender to Krishna, it's useless actually. It seems good, yes, there's an aura of peacefulness. Whereas you may find a devotee doesn't have an aura of peacefulness at all. They may appear to be, very, come on, get the things in the car, we got to go. What's this? Is this a... Oh, yeah, people see Prabhupada, some be very angry. Prabhupada in the installation ceremony in Amsterdam on the TV was shouting, and his disciples, it was all coming on live on TV. Prabhupada didn't care at all because they made such a mess. So Prabhupada, he often wanted to dispel this misconception of the just like when Prabhupada was preaching in America at that time, very popular was this yogi, What's his name? They call him Maharishi, something like that. He died recently. So, you know, the picture of him, he's always smiling, holding a flower. Prabhupada would often use words, rascal, nonsense, animal, fool, all these kind of things. But Prabhupada was actually internally peaceful, whereas that peacefulness that, or those good vibes that come from non-Krishna conscious, maybe a kind of detachment from this material world, or even a feeling of doing good to others, just like Mother Teresa was famous for doing good to others. People said she was very nice, although she was a meat eater. So she wasn't really that, couldn't have been that spiritually advanced. And she lived in Bengal, where she must have heard of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. She had no interest. In fact, she wanted to convert people from being devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to being beef-eating Christians. So philosophically, she was way off. But she had a sense of doing good to others and feeling good. So that can be also misleading. That's why we have to understand philosophically, not just by feelings. I don't think Prabhupada ever said we should do all the things we hear nowadays, go by your heart. Prabhupada never said such a thing. He said you have to be guided by Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. So some people, they may have some level of detachment from the material world which gives them a sense of peacefulness or a sense of doing good to others which gives them an aura of goodness. But ultimately, if they're not Krishna conscious, they can't help anyone. It's just misleading. So you should have philosophically blasted him anyway. Or at least presented. I mean, not necessarily blasted, but at least you could have said that, all right, this is very nice, but what about surrender to Krishna? That's the real thing. Feeling good and feeling nice on a platform which is not a surrender to Krishna is also misleading. That's what the Mayavadis do. Even those who are perfect Mayavadis or perfect impersonalists, they do get liberated from this material world, but they have to come back again because they don't surrender to Krishna. So there may be many saintly persons. Definitely, I was talking about sadhus. Some sadhus are genuine sadhus. And one of the most famous sadhus of the 20th century in India was this Chandrasekharendran Saraswati, the Shankaracharya of Kanchi. He died, he was over 100 years old. He died about, 15 years ago. He was a genuine sadhu. He followed all the rules strictly, he was very austere. He studied the Vedas, he encouraged others. He was a genuine sadhu, but he was a Mayavadi. So, actually he was somewhat of a devotee also. But basically, he was a Mayavadi, so I mean, even a neophyte devotee in our society who's trying to do a little book distribution, of course, it's not such a neophyte thing to do book distribution, it's actually a very elevated platform. But they're better situated than someone who's achieved a level of sense control and spiritual understanding, but not Krishna conscious. They're better situated. This we have to understand philosophically. Siddhanta bolya chitte na karaha alosh eha hoite Krishna lage surira manosh. Try to understand Siddhanta, or the proper conclusion of Shastra. Don't be lazy in this matter. Because in this way our mind will become strongly attached to Krishna. We should understand that without attachment to Krishna, everything is useless, even so-called spiritual perfection. Even if it feels good. It may feel good, but it doesn't please Krishna, so what's the use? Better not to feel good. That's Krishna consciousness. That's an advanced stage, maybe. But that not feeling good for the sake of attachment to Krishna, that is actually very pleasing to Krishna. And that apparent distress is actually underneath that is a current of tremendous bliss. That's why we find that often the acharyas, they sing Kripa bolo kano koro ami boro duki. Narottam Das says, I'm very unhappy. But Narottam Das's unhappiness is his apparent unhappiness is incomparably more blissful than the impersonalist's fuzzy bliss, not focused on Krishna. So don't get carried away by all these feel-good vibes. It's not the goal of life. Fix on Krishna. And it's nice if people are nice. It's better than, you know, no doubt that person who you met is better than a serial killer. Of course, serial killers are considered really evil people, but then during the course of this class, how many hundreds and thousands of animals have been serially slaughtered throughout the world? So serial killing is a part of our culture, of the culture of the world. They've rationalized that killing animals is all right and killing human beings isn't. And you can also kill human beings as long as they're in the womb. Once they come out, you shouldn't kill them. But before that, it's okay. So it's a really screwed up society. Right? Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Eva Kevalam, Kalo Nasteva, 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 Gatira Nyata, and distribute Prabhupada's books also. And read them also. And understand them also. Otherwise, what are we going to preach? Please. Hare Krishna. Anything else? Yes. Please pass the mic. Back to Kalyani Devi Dasi. She who is giving real benefit to others.
I was just wondering, I had a question and then I wanted to ask you
something as well. And somehow or other, Krishna. Where's my shoulder bag?
Connected.
Yeah, okay. Ask Pancha now. Ask Pancha. Is there another bag there? You must have it. Let me know. No. Alright, please ask the question.
I remember you telling a story a few times about when we were traveling with Prabhupada Vishnu Swami and traveling Sankirtan, and that Prabhupada wrote you a letter, a Sankirtan group a letter.
No, I wasn't traveling. I traveled with him in various parts of the world, but the letter was written before I even was allowed in the door of ISKCON. Yeah. Anyway, you can.
I was trying to remember exactly what Prabhupada had said by engaging in this sankirtan.
Yeah, okay, let me paraphrase it. Prabhupada Vishnu Das Brahmachari from Ireland, Ireland's glory. This is actually the glory of Ireland, the devotees. So he was Brahmachari at that time. He started the first traveling sankirtan party in Britain. He joined in Britain. I think he first met the devotees in New York and got a book from them, and they told him to come to the town Prabhupada's, and he said, I've got a flight in a couple of hours to London. So he went to London, and then he went to the temple there, and Prabhupada was there. It means after a couple of days or something. So anyway, that's a side detail. So after a short time, he started the first traveling sankirtan party in England, in Britain. And Prabhupada wrote a letter encouraging him. He said, you go from place to place, you can do Harinam and distribute books. And if people are interested, you can spend a little time. And it's quite a long letter. And at the end of the letter, he said, yeah, I know you're taking many austerities. Many times you won't have any proper food to eat or no proper arrangement for eating or sleeping. But you should know that one day of sankirtan like this is far better than millions of years of austerities of the yogis. So there's a good one for all of you. That should keep you encouraged, right? So you should know that going on Harinam Sankirtan once, even if it doesn't seem that we don't have that same kind of aura or charisma like some of these Mayavadi gurus, they have a lot of charisma. They have lots of people coming to see them because they made them feel good. But we don't, because we ask people to surrender to Krishna. But this going out on Sankirtan, distributing books, doing Harinam, it's Krishna's pleased. It's far more elevated. It's incomparable to all these bogus groups. They're actually just bogus. I mean, there's so many bogus groups. Modern Hinduism is dominated by these bogus gurus. They're just some personality cult, and they just talk a lot of rubbish. Really, it's really nonsense. Yeah.
Seems like the Mayavadi philosophy really makes people foolish. Like almost like the whole culture that follows Mayavadi philosophy.
Yeah, like this New Age in the West.
Yes. Is Shankaracharya's purpose, part of his purpose, is if people become foolish, then they will eventually surrender to Krishna by becoming foolish.
Another way
we say to be a fool before the spiritual master.
Shankara, the Mayavad makes people foolish, and then one should be a fool before the spiritual master. But that's a different type of foolishness. One has to be intelligent to be Krishna conscious. That the foolishness of Mayavad is to think oneself God. But the foolishness one should exhibit before the spiritual master is it's actually intelligent to realize that I don't know anything and I need to be instructed. So that's beneficial foolishness. It's actually a sign of intelligence. Whereas the idea of thinking, well, I'm God, or I am the cosmic waves, or whatever they think, it's just completely nonsense, the most stupid thing. So there's a lot of difference. Shankaracharya, it said that, I remember when I first read that in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, that one of his purposes was to increase the population. And then in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Prabhupada wrote that even though the Mayavadis of Varanasi and the Buddhists of Sarnath, which is just close to Varanasi, it's a Buddhist center. He said that although they follow all these rules and regulations and they're very strict, they're actually both the gross materialists. I couldn't understand that. If they're following austerely all these things, how are they gross materialists? But I got some realization of this when I spent some time in Thailand. And most people from the West who go to Thailand go there for gross sense gratification, because it's famous for that. So I spent some time there. Of course, I didn't go for sense gratification. I went to attempt to preach Krishna consciousness. It was very difficult because the culture is based on hardcore Buddhism. There's two main divisions of Buddhism. One is kind of semi-almost theistic. And the other is stridently atheistic. The Theravada Buddhism. They deny any God or anything. They hate the idea of, if people say Buddha is God, they think that they don't like that at all. So anyway, but although they're theoretically they are Buddhists, but actually, it's a country of gross sense gratification, which all kinds of things are eaten. To walk down the street is just such an austerity, because they're frying grasshoppers on the street and live grasshoppers. They have a jar of live grasshoppers and they turn it upside down in the wok of hot oil and all kinds of things, snakes, rats, and what don't they, dogs, and what don't they eat. So and all kinds of sex. It's a prostitution capital, and So it's a horrible place for devotees, or no comes like it. So anyway, the most popular food is pig, pork. So I asked a Thai woman once, don't you know in your next life by eating, so you're a Buddhist, so don't you know you'll have to become a pig? And she said, yes. Well, aren't you afraid of them? She said, no, I'd be happy as a pig also. So what I understood is, have you got my shoulder bag? Yeah, can you bring it? What I understood is that the goal of Buddhism or Mayavad is to, just to simplify, it's just to become nothing. So there's nothing to do. We don't become nothing, you are nothing. And anyway, everything's nothing, according to the Buddhists. Of course, they have a lot of philosophical argument among themselves over the nature of nothing, or how to be nothing. But basically, everything is nothing. So who wants to be nothing? Or you can merge and become some kind of cosmic oneness, but there's nothing to do. There's no love, there's no activity. So in either case, the goal is not very relishable. And the way to achieve it is also miserable. You have to do all these austerities over many lifetimes. So most people, if they're who take to that philosophy or who are born into it, they just say, well, you know, I'll try it next lifetime. For now, let's get on with life and enjoy it. First, I have to become disgusted with the material life, and then I can become self-realized. So I'm going to work very hard in this life to become disgusted. But I mean, I'm going to work very hard to enjoy it, and then, you know, then I'll become disgusted. So what actually happens is that they become gross sense enjoyers. That's the result. That's what actually happens. I think I'm going to finish now. Is that okay? Because it's late, late, late. For those who have to go a long way. Unless anyone is... No, all right, I'll finish. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna.